WHPC, Garden City, New York. We are 90.3 FM, the voice of Nassau Community College, offering you a mix of informational and educational programming with a great blend of eclectic music, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
This is Motormouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show. And now, here are your Motormouths, Chris Switzer, Mikey T., and Ray Guarino.
Good Sunday afternoon. Welcome to another fabulous edition of Motormouth Radio. I'm Chris Switzer. Also, Ray Guarino is here. Mikey T. is missing in action.
As usual.
He's probably on the Southern State driving as fast as he can. And Sina Yuenko, our esteemed producer, is on the phone, so you can give us a call and talk to Sina. 516-572-7440. Very special edition of Motormouth Radio today. This very nice August, hot August
beautiful
day. Yes, I know. I love this weather.
I know.
You, Ray.
Yeah, I
do
AC.
Love this. I do love this weather with a passion. Ray, what's going on?
I want to hit on a couple of things happening this weekend. Today at 11 a.m. at Kennedy Plaza in Long Beach, they're doing an outdoor car classic and truck parade. Vehicles are on display before the parade starting at 9, so that's already a couple hours old.
Okay.
$5 donation. I'm not going to give you the number of the webpage because if you're not there yet, forget it. also, Chris, for you today is the Cadillac LaSalle Club's Long Island Dream Boat Cadillac Night.
That's right. Low and slow, chrome and fins.
That's it. That's 5:30 to 10 tonight at Papalardo's Pizza Cove, 179 Hicksville Road in Plain Edge.
Do you know I'm driving my dad's Cadillac Seville out there?
Cool,
it's
very
cool. It's a 77 Caddy.
Cool.
Mint.
And the next thing is, next weekend happens to be a very special event. It's Corvettes at Carlisle. The Carlisle Fairgrounds in Carlisle, PA.
That's the granddaddy of Corvette shows, if I'm not mistaken, on the East Coast.
It is very. That's very astute of you, Chris.
Oh,
and speaking of the granddaddy of Corvette shows, we happen to have with us today, if I may use the term granddaddy loosely, we have the granddaddy of Corvettes and Corvette racing. We have Mr. Frank Dominiani on our show today, who is, I consider, an icon in the field of Corvettes and Corvette racing.
It's not often do we have a legend, if I can say so, or one that is more versed than all of us put together.
We're legends in our own mind, but Frank actually has put down and done what people only aspire and dream to do
in their
lifetimes.
Yes, it was very good reading, Frank. I was reading up on whatever information that Ray had given me this week, and I was nothing short of amazed of what you do and how you do it. It's just fabulous. It's just incredible. I'm sorry. We're gushing.
Yeah. Well, you know, Frank owns a shop called High Speed and Power in Valley Stream. It's been there since. Frank, you opened the doors in what year?
Oh, God, it was 1949.
1949, yeah. That's, you know, 11 years before I was born. But I used to go there in high school and buy my Holley rebuild kits. And I think I bought some shifter bushings at the time.
So you've actually been there.
I've been there 30 years ago, yeah. Yeah. And stumbled onto Frank a few weeks ago with my friend Kevin after we found our Pontiac cache of parts on Randall's Island.
Right.
We drove by and said, hey, the door's open. What's going on? You know, because the shop looks like it did in 75.
Right.
We walked in, Frank.
Which looks like it did in 65.
Which is great. Frank graciously took us in and spoke with us and gave us the time out of his day. And then I went back a couple times. Chris, you came with me. We had a great time.
I never had a better time. I was amazed. I was nothing short of amazed to see the shop.
And we cajoled Frank into actually coming here and doing this soiree.
Which it is.
According to one of my customers, he says, I'm there 2 years older than water.
2 years older. Right. Now, Frank, you had a racing career that was stellar. You retired from racing in 66, I believe, correct?
I beg your pardon?
You retired from racing in 66?
No.
I had wrong information here.
Yeah, it was 71, right?
Even later than
that.
Wait,
talk to this guy.
The articles they were written by people who were not knowledgeable sometimes.
Well,
you know,
that's why you're here.
That's why we want to clear that up. Yeah.
That's why the tapes are rolling.
I raced out in the later years. My Corvette was owned by Jan Hyde, And then I raced out Laguna Seca back in 89, 90.
Right. Okay.
The same car.
Really?
Oh,
no,
sure.
The same car you raced in 62, 63,
all the way
and 64.
Up, yeah.
You're racing it again.
Yes.
In 1990?
Yes, at Laguna Seca.
Is that the that wasn't like, yeah. That was the historic Nationals?
Yes, correct.
Wow.
Just to backtrack a little bit, I got some information that told me you had raced at some of these tracks before there were tracks there, actually on the streets.
Oh, in Bridgehampton, we went through the town.
Uh-huh,
and
right.
And Watkins Glen also.
And Watkins Glen, right.
Oh,
right.
Sure, sure. Of course.
Stopped and got a quart of milk.
Coffee.
Of course.
Coffee, right. Coffee, we keep going.
Right.
There's a 62 Corvette with a little cup holder in the door.
Yeah, yeah. American Racing wheels, roll bar, and a coffee holder.
At that time, you were losing old red aviator cap, you know.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting you mentioned an aviator cap, because your beginnings, I know you had you started with soapbox racers early on when you were a kid, and you moved up to model airplanes.
Right.
And then to homemade midget racers.
You're right. Okay.
And then you found your love, which was aeronautics, right?
No, of course. The technology is so awesome to me, even at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from a time where I was playing with crystal radios, and now to the technology of today, you know.
Right.
To me, I've seen that, and I'm seeing now, and it's overwhelming. It really, it frustrates me, because I can't absorb it all. It's going too fast.
None of us can. Yeah, none of us can.
And, you know, you feel almost inadequate. But I have had some experiences along the way which helped me along the future.
I believe it. How did you get into fuel injection at first? Talk about technology.
The first fuel injected Corvette I had came to Charlie Best in New York.
Okay.
And he gave me the car to race. And it was a terrible piece of junk. It was just like...
What was it?
It was a fuel injected three-speed.
Yeah.
Three-speed.
That's a cast iron three-speed, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I had one of those
in
one of my Chevys.
So terrible.
57 fuel-injected Corvette, which will probably yield about $250,000 right now.
It's a terrible
car.
It was a piece of junk.
Of course.
I love it.
In that year, I ran it down in Cumberland, Maryland, against Carol Shelby was there, and people like that. And they trounced me, because they had a factory supplied four-speed updated fuel injection with big massive drums,
right.
And here I'm running around with asbestos lined drums trying to stop it. No, nonsense. No, real nonsense.
It wasn't working.
But anyhow, the factory gave me another car.
Okay.
A later version, the updated one.
The updated fuel injected four-speed version.
Four-speed of the same year. Mm-hmm. And then we started really having some fun.
Let's go, boys. Yeah, the race is on.
Yeah, right.
And this was in 57?
57, yeah. And Dick Thompson was there, and all these other guys, you know.
Dick Thompson, the flying dentist,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Wow. Very good, Chris. Very cool.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible.
So, and Carol Shelby was there, you know, and all these guys.
Don Yanko.
Yeah, right. Don Yanko.
Al Holbert you raced against.
Al? Oh, sure.
And Bob Grossman.
Bob Grossman.
Who else? Roger Penske, Mark Donahue. These guys, Walter Hanskin.
Walt Hanskin. Oh,
these guys were, I mean, talk about legends of motorsports. Speed Channel has nothing on Motormouth Radio right now, you know, because they've had these guys, and they've had, I know they've had Cale Yarborough, and they've had, you know,
Harry Gantz.
The Andretti's and all. Yeah. They didn't have Frankie D right here.
No,
we got
didn't.
Frank. Let me tell you something. Talk about a local legend from Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the roots don't get any deeper than this.
And just for the fact that as reading up on you, technology was not your strong suit. I kind of realized you didn't really care what was under the hood. It was what was under your head.
You're probably right.
I was amazed how you took on those two big block Cobras in 71.
Yeah.
And the 289 was the one that was... that you were tangling with at the last lap.
Yeah,
the 289,
sure.
The small block Cobra.
That was fun.
The thing that gets me about Frank and reading the articles and speaking to him in person is that his driving style was what, it's kind of like I always said, I won more street races than I ever had the right to win. Why?
Because
I was too thick and too stunned to back down at the last minute. I kept that thing to the floor, whether it be in a car or the motorcycle, I kept it to the floor and just out. I can't say the word.
And stunat is a technical term.
It's an Italian technical term. And I just outseated the pants the guy because he'd back down and say, whoa, enough is... And I understand that's how, Frank, that's how you raced. I think turn one at Bridgehampton was named after you because of the way you took it sideways.
That really was an accident, how it happened.
Like most of them really are.
Yeah, true.
How did it happen?
I was going through there, and it's very terrifying going down there flat out.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, I found myself in a dirt track in this damp Corvette, and it got around a corner.
Dirt tracking, you mean you're just drifting it sideways?
It was uncontrollable, really.
Solid axle Corvette, yeah.
You're pretty much a projectile at that point.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Controlled, well, drifting now is a hobby that the kids
do. Yeah.
And it really is a controlled slide.
Sure.
I mean, that's what Frank was doing,
way back
in the 50s.
40 years ago.
So these kids don't have anything new. They didn't invent it.
No, definitely not. I mean, you're doing it on fairly street tires compared to what they're doing now.
Bicycle tires, for God's sake.
Oh, my gosh.
And hard as rock. Never wore out. Stop it either.
Right, you were throwing them in there, right? The tires were like airborne. Like the car was airborne because they were so hard. The compound was so hard. I believe
that's
it.
That's true. That's true.
516-572-7440. 516-572-7440. Get in on this. This is Motormouth Radio talking to Frank Dimignani from High Speed Power. The High Speed Power in Valley Stream right here. So
Frank, Chris mentioned something about those Cobras. How tough was it racing against those Cobras? Because those cars were the Corvette was always the top car, but the Cobras were really one thing and one thing only.
They were animals.
So how was it racing against those Cobras?
Well, it was so challenging that I love challenges.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course, this is...
you came to do this show. So we know that you're not a man that does things the easy way. We know that already.
Being a hard-nosed guy, I just found it as an insult that those people with large sums of money were able to control the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, having a small shop and being a small man, I found it... challenging to such a point, it was an obsession.
Mm-hmm.
The obsession was that I had to be competitive.
Right.
And I don't like to follow anybody.
I don't blame
and,
you.
And
you should see trying to follow me here. It was like, no, I'm only kidding you. I'm only kidding you.
So I developed a personality which was pretty aggressive. And I felt that these guys... If they had the gumption to stay with me, and I had the gumption to stay with them, it was going to be a battle.
I
don't
love
care.
It.
I said,
yeah.
And this was the whole thing. And of course, I developed kind of a reputation as being uncontrollable.
Ah, I love that word.
It wasn't.
That's a good
I was
word.
Controllable to me. I was controlled.
Right.
But to other people, this guy is all over the place.
Yeah.
And I understood that, but I wasn't concerned what they thought. Right. I had to find my place, and that was up front.
Right.
And,
beautiful.
Of course, with these superior cars, Cobras and the factory sponsored and blah, 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 all the nonsense, I found it more challenging. And I had more of an interest to overcome this here challenge.
Using like a quarter or a half of the funds, the money.
I had no funds. I had some sponsorship from Charlie Bass,
right.
who since died last week.
Oh.
But the poor guy, the guy gave me a car and he offered me some assistance. The factory didn't offer me too much.
Right.
Only in later years when I went to Daytona and I went to Sebring and I had to buy a car and go to, I went to Detroit to see Dunthorpe. And all these guys.
Zora, the father of the Corvette.
Yeah.
You know, Frank reminds me of the way I build my cars. I use my Italian cousin, Alfonso Mafunzolo. That's how I build all of my stuff. It's on whatever,
I have Italian tires on my Triumph. They're called Baldorinos.
I have the Baldini specials on mine, yeah.
I know.
You're not the only one, Chris. Yeah, I want to talk about some of your old cars, too, because not just only Corvettes. Pre-Corvette days, you had quite a row of automobilia.
Yeah, Well, I had a tiny car, what you call Class H, which was a 750cc car, which I imported from Italy, and then
Frank. Frank and I put the first turbo on the Flintstone mobile.
Mikey T decides to walk in, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold on. First, let me explain something, okay?
Why?
I stopped to help motorists in trouble. I'm sure Frank does over the years.
Okay.
And as I'm coming in the entrance of the school, there's this poor old guy pushing his car halfway back up the hill.
Frank, that's the guy we cut off on the way in. we
so
beached him.
I stopped and I asked him, I said, are you broken down? He says, no, I ran out of gas. I said to the guy, all right. So he said, let's push it up. We pushed the car back up into the parking lot. He said, I have a gas can in the car. And he's digging through the car, finally finds a gallon gas can. I take him to the mobile station right down the block. We get gas, come back. He starts putting it in. The gas is leaking all over the place. Ooh. I said, where's the rubber washer for the hose?
Yeah.
He said, oh, I must have lost it. Right? This guy isn't the most organized. So then finally, he puts again. I said, put the gas in the car, put everything away, start the car, and then go, and I'll follow you to the gas station.
Right.
He says, no, it's okay, and he starts the car with a gallon of gas and lets it run.
Oh,
so finally he's cleaning up, puts everything away, and I follow him to the gas station. About halfway down Stewart Avenue, I figured he'll coast him by now, and I came back.
Yeah.
Now you want me to tell you who it was?
Who?
Our station manager, Rob Leonard.
Oh, jeez!
Oh, no!
I was going to say, the guy lets the car run, it's probably a 67 Hemi Barracuda or something. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's fitting for Rob, yeah. Well, that's how he gets to clean the sediment out of the tank.
Yeah, right.
You know, he recycles it through the filter.
Right, he pushes it through the carburetor.
Right.
When he said, I have a can in here somewhere, I sat there, and he's lifting tabletops, newspapers.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to see this car.
Exactly, beach chairs.
The people at the dumps refuse this car.
Yeah. 516-572-7440 is the phone number, 516-572-7440. This is Motor Mouth Radio. Frank Dominiani from High Speed and Power and Valley Stream. Call us up to speak to a racing legend right here at Motor Mouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Mikey T, I'm Chris Switzer. Keep it here, more to come. Hold on.
This is Motor Mouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show.
Hi, this is Charles Schmidt. Listen to my show, Artists of Yesterday and Today. I will feature artists such as Peggy Lee.
I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever.
Julio Iglesias.
All I need is the air that I breathe in.
Doris Day. Spanning the music decades of the 30s through today, I will bring you the American Classic Songbook of artists, music that has been forgotten and hasn't been heard in many years. So each week I hope to touch your heart with songs that we all grew fond of. Remember, listen to the artists of yesterday and today with myself, Charles Schmidt, on station WHPC 90.3 FM, the voice of Nassau Community College.
Thursdays at 3 p.m.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouse a call at 516-572-7440.
Recognize that voice? That's the voice of Rob Leonard.
who's filing for AAA membership as we speak via the internet on his iPod.
Robbie's on the phone with us now. Hi, Rob.
Thank you, Mike.
No problem, Rob.
Much appreciated. No, I have to say, I'm not the operations manager. I am the official spokesperson, I believe, your show.
You're the Motor Mouth manager.
And you do a good job of it, too.
Yes, but my point is you need to pay attention to our show a little more often. Your gas can's buried, and at the same time, it leaks. You got more gas in the parking lot than you did in the car.
Well, the funny thing is, when I told Mike that I had a gas can, he was like, well, shocked. He's like, what do you do?
Yeah, I was.
It doubles as a Prestone can, doubles as like
No. He had a Prestone can, three washer fluid cans. He says, but the last time I went to put gas in him, the guy in the gas station said, no! So he says to me, Rob says to me, why don't they let you do that? Because it melts the gas. I go, that, and when you transport it, it leaks, and it's not designated for transportation.
So you're finally mobile, and you have gas, and...
I'm currently driving on the Northern State, and it's the gas tank is full now, so
Beautiful.
Yeah, I thought I was going to make it there. It's like a mile from where the station.
Yeah.
And I figured, I know I was low, and I figured, okay, I'll just make it. I did. I coasted so along, and actually I was about to call you, Chris, when Mike showed up.
Good thing Mike showed up.
Good thing Mike's always late.
Yeah, I'd be walking back right now.
Yeah, yeah. We would be leaving you there for
and
an hour.
And you'd be about 40 pounds lighter.
That's not a plus.
Well, at least I had a gas can. That was the
yes. I'm still amazed. I figured when I followed you down Stewart Avenue, I figured you were on the downhill, so I could turn around.
Thanks a lot, Robbie.
Okay, talk to you later.
We'll
okay,
talk later, to you Robbie. Soon. Bye bye. Yeah, every sign is saying every now and then it pays to stop and get some gas.
Well, he said the first thing he said to me was, "I was running late, so I thought I could make it."
Yeah, right.
Famous last words. Right. Thought I could make it.
Yes. I actually did that one time working in radio. I pulled into the parking lot to do my shift, and as soon as I pulled in, the car went and
wow.
just died right there. So
we went out water skiing this morning. I'm heading over to the Cove, and we're picking up a friend of Jeff's. Pull up to his house, pick him up, go over to the Cove. We start water skiing. And I'm saying, man, the boat's running beautiful. It's really fast. I look down. Yeah, it's fast because I'm like 10 gallons of gas left.
Yeah.
What is it, 8 pounds a gallon for fuel?
8 pounds of fuel, yeah. You know, Frank, that's what we do. One of the things we do is we try to stress auto maintenance, how to keep your car in good shape, take care of the basic things like tire pressure, fuel filters, wiper blades. We do shows, you know, when the weather changes. We do, you know, a lot like that to try and let people know, like Rob, who don't know, you know, that you got to put gas in your car if you want to drive home, you know.
Let's sum it up. Pay me now or pay me later.
Right. Very true. Very true.
You know what that fuel filter looks like.
516-572-7440. Talk
right.
to Frank
You were
Mignani.
Talking about racing when you were a kid. And what'd
yeah,
you
yeah.
call it?
Well, I was talking about racing by my...
Okay. Seat of your pants.
Yeah, my yes.
Let's clean it up.
Yeah, I
show.
Couldn't find the
Sunday
correct
afternoon.
Terminology, but yeah, I was...
Yes.
Let's go to the phones. On the phones right now, Alan from Glen Head. Alan, hi. Welcome to the Motor Mounts and Frank Dominiani from High Speed and Power at Valley Stream. How are you?
Good.
What's
good.
Going on?
I chimed in. I just figured I'd give Frank a call. And I met him in 1973 at Bridgehampton.
Really?
Oh, my God.
He was racing that 1962 Corvette with the big number 69 on it.
Yep. Oh, old 69.
That's great.
Yeah, and I had my 62 Corvette there. It was down to the bare fiberglass. And I had asked him, I said, should I set this up for racing? He says, the car is too old, but you should better off restore it.
Uh-huh.
So I took his advice.
Really?
Yeah.
And you restored the car? Do you still have it now, Alan?
No, I sold it, and I bought it back, and I sold it again, and it's the car's still somewhere on Long Island, but I lost track of it.
Oh, son of a gun, son of a gun. Yeah. So you met Frank, when was that again, 1973?
1973 I met him, but of course I know of him from beforehand. I just never met him until that point at Bridgehampton.
Really?
They were doing some vintage races and some time trials that day.
So, Alan, what else do you know about Frank Dominiani?
Well, Frank, I know there were a couple other guys out there that were in the sport. Warren Schreiber was one of them, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Warren Schreiber had a mobile station in Merrick, mm-hmm. right by Meadowbrook Parkway and Merrick Road, right near where they have the big Oldsmobile show across the street from there.
That's where the Father's Day show is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Warren Schreiber, he was... did a lot of racing, and he was mostly with Long Island Corvette Owners Association, and there was another one called Long Island Sports Car Association, LISCA, and then there was the Scuderia X Club. And, of course, I know Jan Hyde for a long time, and I insured both of those cars, and when Jan owned the 62, I insured the car for him until he sold it a couple of years ago.
Oh, so okay.
Just so people know, this is Alan Blay of the insurance fame who we've had on the show.
Right. This is our Motor Mouth Classic Car Insurance Maven, Alan Blay.
Previous and future guest of the show, yes.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of other guys, too, Al, right? There was like Frank McGurk and Pat Amendola.
Frank McGurk, oh,
yeah, well,
name.
Pat Amendola.
Don Garlitz.
A video he made of a film that he took in October of 1954 at Thompson Speedway in Connecticut. And Frank is driving one of those cars. That might have been the 750cc Italian car that he had.
Uh-huh. Wow. You know, incredible.
So. Yeah, but Frank's been around a long time, and very...
And we hope for a lot longer, too.
Alan, what else do you know about Frank? Come on. Any kernels of information?
Those are the major things.
Those are the major things, right?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Major things.
That defines the man.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, I mean, he did... work on a lot of fuel injection units back to the first ones from 1957 on Chevrolets that I know. And Bass Chevrolet was very active. I mean, Charlie Bass, I didn't even know he just died last week, but is that correct? Is that what I heard?
Yes.
But Bass Chevrolet, in fact, I had my first Corvette show there in April of 1975, and it was written up in Corvette News later that year.
Wow.
And that was one of the first Corvette Concours we had. McCall shows were not really in vogue at the time. People were racing, at least Jim Kahana's up in Mitchell Field and Bridgehampton and Lime Rock. I worked the flags at the Bridgehampton about 30 years ago.
Very cool.
Races, you know, turn three, turn four.
You were turn marshal.
Yeah, yeah.
Very nice.
I did a lot of that stuff. So I met a lot of people back in those years when the collecting hobby was growing. But
as you're jumping out of their way.
Right. Yeah, right. Jumping over their hood. Mm-hmm. Alan, thank you so much. A wealth of information, my brother. Thank you.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I'm going to get you back on the show, too.
Okay.
Thanks,
you got it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. 516-572-7440. 516-572-7440 is the phone number. Talk
you
to
know, as us guys get older, we can't remember what we did last week, but ask us anything pertaining to a car.
Yeah.
Forget it. We'll tell you when, where, how, and who was standing there when we did it.
I went down to Belmore at the train station Friday night to get some interviews, talk to people, and I'm talking to some guys with the road rats. With the rat rod cars, right? I'm going to join their club. But anyway, guy Pete, great guy. And up walks Al Blake with his Motor Mouth Radio t-shirt on. The guy does more advertising than we do, you know? So a good friend of the show, Alan Blake, is a very good friend of the show.
He mentioned the fact that we glued the shirt to his chest has nothing to do with
super
it.
Glue.
He mentioned something about a 750cc Italian car. What was that, Frank?
Back in 1949... I was racing way back then, 48, 49.
Okay.
I had a TCMG, which I started out.
Wow.
And
a TD just, also, correct?
Yes, yeah. Sports Car Club of America. At that time, there was a handful of drivers, you know. There was Sterling Morse and people like that at that time, you know.
The scarf and cap crowd, though, right?
Right.
With goggles.
In walks Grassroots Frank. Tell us what happened. I know you shook those guys up hard.
And I imported a little Italian car called a Jawa. That's a G-U-I-A-R.
Okay.
Not J-A-W-A.
That's
funny. That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's right.
Jawa.
Yeah,
and it was a 750cc Crosley engine powered car.
What's
the car good? Weighed about 900 pounds.
Oh my gosh!
All tube frame, aluminum body.
Right.
And I campaigned that at that time.
Right.
Until I did my TCs, and I did
an Allard also, didn't you?
An Allard, J2 Allard.
Formula Juniors, Elva, and Elva.
Elva, I had an Elva rear engine, Elva.
Yeah.
I had a front engine BMC from Joe Huffick in California.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was an Austin engine, laid on the side.
Those aren't even the special construction cars that this guy had. I mean, these are the ones that you could buy.
Yeah,
exactly. You're kidding me.
The Elva was nice. It was an English shop.
Crosley and Hot Shot, too, right?
Crosley, yeah.
You raced a Crosley Hot Shot?
Well, let me qualify that. At the I know it's a joke today.
What was that like?
You say something.
That was the jitterbug class. Ran on milk.
Let me justify it.
No, tell us, because a lot of people don't know what that is.
Yeah, please describe it, yes.
Well, at the time, I was importing a lot of superchargers from Italy, Italomeccanica.
And that was what year, Frank? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, that's back in the 48, 49.
48 is important. Superchargers.
Yeah, you're so far ahead of your time back then.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And so I mounted a front crankshaft-driven supercharger on the Crosley.
Oh, my God.
That's like Tim Allen's lawnmower.
Yeah, I was just going to say that and the supercharger is bigger than a whole damn car.
Yeah, exactly. Sure,
got it right.
You're talking about a Crosley Hotshot has got to have like an 80-inch wheelbase. It's probably 98 inches completely from bumper to bumper. Yeah.
Right.
It's about as wide as it's like literally putting a supercharger in a refrigerator. Yeah. That's pretty much.
You'd have to put plates on the back bumper to keep it from nosediving. That's how small a car is.
It is. They are.
Yeah,
they were itty bitty.
Stink though, huh?
Oh my god!
They were fooling. Let me tell you.
I can imagine. You want to talk about sleeper? I'm gonna put a Hemi in my Fiat, and that's gonna be about the same. You know,
why do all of a sudden you get the Herbie the Love Bug picture of Frank going?
Absolutely.
That's how he got his aircraft license. Probably airborne in a Crosley Hotshot. Probably. All
Frank, why'd you get a pilot's license? Because I flew off the end of the track and I liked it.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back. We have a very special caller on the phone. We're going to take a quick break right now. So 516-572-7440. Tell them to hold on. 516-572-7440. We're going to take a quick break with Frank Dominiani from High Speed and Power in Valley Stream. Ray Guarino, Mikey T. I'm Chris Switzer. Motormouth Radio Part 2 coming your way. Keep it here.
Let the Motormouths help you with all your car questions at 516-572-7440.
Take another soul excursion through time as I play for you some of the rarest sounds. Midnight to 3 a.m. Hosted by yours truly, DJ Solero. Only on 90.3 FM, WHPC, the radio voice of Nassau Community College.
Would you notice if you were missing half your kidney function? According to the National Kidney Foundation, 20 million people have chronic kidney disease and 20 million more may be at risk and not even know it. I'm Dr. Keith Norris, Associate Dean for Research at Charles Drew University. Anyone with high blood pressure, diabetes, or family history of chronic kidney disease is at risk. Early diagnosis is vitally important. To get the whole story, talk to your doctor and visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org or call 1-800-622-9010 for a free brochure.
Got a car question? Give the Motormouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motormouth Radio, where we're taking those calls at 516-572-7440. Frank Dominiani from High Speed and Power in Valley Stream. And we have a very special call on the phone. Let's do this right now. Jan Hyde from Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the Motormouths. How are you, Jan?
Hello.
Hi, Jan. How are you? Welcome to Motormouth Radio.
How are we doing now?
Good. We're doing very well. How are you?
This is Jan Hyde. This is Ray.
Yes, you have Ray, Chris. I'm Ray. You have Chris and you have Mike and of course, Frank.
And you have Frank.
Hey, good afternoon, you guys.
How you doing?
Good.
So how's the car?
Well, the car I still own.
Old 69, right?
No. I don't own 69 anymore, but I still own a 1960 Fuelie, which were it not for your honored guest today, Frank Dominiani, maybe I wouldn't.
Really?
There may be... Frank can tell you, maybe there are a dozen and a half people in the country who you can trust to keep a fuel injection unit working.
And we got them sitting next to us right here.
We have one of them.
The self-taught pioneer experts.
Wow.
Hey, Jan, I wonder if you could...
Speed vision eat your heart out.
That's what I said before. Jan, I wonder if you could touch on... You mentioned earlier about this DVD that's coming up. Are you at liberty to say something about
sure,
that?
Sure. I'm at liberty because you're talking to the person who put it together.
Very nice.
And Frank is somewhat aware of it. I've just completed a pilot production, and I'll be having these available in a month or so through the National Corvette Museum. Of a DVD that is based on a talk I gave last year in late August, about a year ago, at the second Carlisle Racers reunion, which Frank was there along with a lot of his other compatriots, those that are still alive and kicking like Frank, and it was a wonderful weekend which all the drivers got back together and a lot of the fans and collectors and people who have followed Corvette racing very closely. So I based this thing, the DVD, a storyline along the beginnings and where Corvette racing has gone today.
Now that's called Racing Corvettes, The Road to Immortality. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Very good. That's we're going to look for that one.
Good.
Because that's that lays down the whole groundwork for the basis of this sport with these guys, what they did. These guys are like the barnstormers. the what else can you say? That you know the real roots of that part of motorsport.
Well, I'm just still laughing at all the research you do.
If I could jump in, guys.
Yeah.
You have in your midst, I think, one of the pioneer road racers in the United States. Mm-hmm. Frank can tell you before he started racing Corvettes, I think it's correct that he had built a number of home-built specials, mm-hmm. and I believe Frank raced on some circuits like Watkins Glen and Bridgehampton before there were dedicated separate racetracks. They were racing in the streets.
Right. Wow. We were talking about that, and also his supercharged Crosley, which we find fascinating.
Yes, this is true. Jan, do you have any stories that stand out with Frank? Anything that you can throw in that would epitomize?
Too numerous to mention, but I want to make something clear. I came to the New York area in 1966 and was referred to Frank because I was autocrossing and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I really got here about 4 or 5 years too late to enjoy the years when Frank was racing more actively and literally tearing up the circuits. I think if I'm correct, Frank started racing Corvettes in maybe 57 or 58, mm-hmm. and his last race car was a 62, which I wound up buying from Frank in 1969. But I think it's correct that Frank's last full season was in 1966. In 1964, he had campaigned all around the country and won the SCCA B Production National Championship. But yes, there are numerous stories, though, because Frank's such a wonderful guy and a great mm-hmm. character.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're talking to a national points champion winner right here. Mike, you might have missed some of the guys that Frank had raced with, like the likes of Don Yanko. And
yeah, I heard you on the...
okay, you got that.
The Yanko Chevelles and Camaros and stuff. I'm laughing because we're sitting here and Frank isn't saying anything. People are going to start thinking he passed away. And
God forbid.
The poor guy's God sitting forbid. Here and they're all talking.
We're all paying homage to Frank.
Yeah.
Jan, you met Frank over...
And yet I'm dying to hear about this Camaro, this 58 fuel-injected Camaro.
Corvette.
Oh, Corvette. Yeah.
Jan, you met Frank over a blown transmission, is that correct? A blown fourth gear?
I wasn't totally blown, but I had moved to the city, got my first job, and moved to New York. And I was looking for a place to live, and I found myself driving across the Brooklyn Bridge and on a hot afternoon in June, and I couldn't get much out of fourth gear. And somebody from Boston, where I had gotten out of school, had suggested if you have, you should really see Frank Dominiani high-speed power equipment.
What were you driving over the bridge?
My 60 Corvette.
Oh, okay, okay, the one you have, yeah. Okay.
Come on, Chris, stay with the story.
Working on it.
That's a good question. And I had the thought to find my way to Frank's shop in Valley Stream, and
which was out in the country back then.
Well,
potato farms.
It wasn't totally a potato farm, but I'll never forget as a newcomer to New York City, from the Brooklyn Bridge to Valley Stream, I took the most direct way, which was on Atlantic Avenue.
Oh, boy.
I ran through, East New York, Bedford-Stuyvesant.
You took the scenic route.
And I thought, you know, when am I going to get to this place?
Right, but you figure in a Corvette so you can outrun them if you have to, right?
Right, very true. I'm also from Brooklyn, so I'm well aware of where you were.
Well, obviously, you've spent some time with Frank. You just don't walk in and meet Frank and disappear. He's a great personality, so not only did he take care of me and my problem, but obviously I was very infatuated with the fact that he was racing, and coincidentally, I had seen him race at Thompson, Connecticut, which is no longer in existence, but that was a track up in the northeastern part of the state. And I recall vividly Frank and Don Yanko and Bob Grossman, who is no longer with us, was racing a Ferrari. And that was the big race at the end of the day, and I was just enthralled with that. You're on a twisty road course, and the Corvettes would nail it, and they'd go flying down the straight, and then Grossman would outbreak them and go into the turn and pass them, and mm-hmm. they must have been jockeying back and forth, for the whole race. It was very, very exciting.
Wow.
Frank, let me ask you a question. Is it true that the early Corvette was pretty much doomed from the start, and it was a racing program that breathed new life into that series of car?
That's pretty much true. Uh-huh. I can't say it was a racing car as such. Mm-hmm. It looked like a home-built type of thing. And it should have been relegated to the graveyard at the start, you know.
Okay. But those early Corvettes were, you know, Blue Flame sixes. They were two-speed automatics.
Yeah,
they were
power glides.
They were made for the upper, you know, the scoff and the cap crowd. Yeah. But
I still have my '68 El Camino with the two-speed power glide.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my friend at the tranny shop said, "Rip that tranny out." I said, "Really?" He goes, "Put a turbo 400." I said, "Why would I rip out a power glide?" He said, "So I could take it."
Jan, just you have anything else to add, please?
Well, yeah, I'd like to just continue on that a little bit because it's kind of the beginning of where the story of my DVD starts. It's not mine. I mean, this is history. This is Corvette history. But Frank is absolutely right. The motivation to build the Corvette came from a man named Harley Earl, who was the father, really the father of automobile styling.
Sure.
He was the first person in the industry, and that included Ford and Chrysler and anybody else, who had the ability to envision and build cars with streamlined bodies. And if you can recall, remember the 53 Corvette was a rather boxy-looking thing, the 54. Mm-hmm. 55 got a little bit more treatment. Harley Earl's son was pestering him. He wanted something classy to take to college.
Right.
And Harley Earl was a little bit frustrated. GM didn't have something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest thing available was a Jaguar XK120, which
right.
Frank will remember. And that's a car with a nice long swoopy hood and a little built-in headlights and all that. And so Harley Earl had one of his stylists. They bought one of the cars and they took it apart and he mocked the thing up and he said, you know, why can't we build a car? So the result was a model called EX-122. It was a show car that appeared in early January at what GM had at the time called these Motorama shows, and this one kicked off in New York at the Waldorf Astoria. So, you know, if you look in Corvette books, you see pictures of this thing, and everybody's oohing and awing, and I mean, the thing was really beautiful, you know, everybody went crazy of it. So they rushed it into production, and that's where, you know, Frank is getting to. I mean, It was nice looking, no roll-up windows.
Right.
They had the little two-speed.
Yeah.
The thing was obviously heavy. It was a little bit of a slug to get around.
Right.
The other thing is low volume. They couldn't justify tooling up for a metal body. So they went around and found different suppliers to make these fiberglass molded panels. And if you look at these cars, you know, nothing in them ever fit right.
Sure.
You know, this one was a little out of whack here and there. And I think they missed it. So they had this very good-looking, underpowered car that they mistakenly tried to market only to fancy people, celebrities and stars. And, you know, after a while, they got rid of them. So this car was headed for extinction by 1955, and we all remember they came out with a two-seat Thunderbird, and they were taking five times as many orders for those as Corvettes.
Right, because they marketed it as a boulevard car.
That's right. And it had a V8 engine in it, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, Frank would recall, and Frank knew Zora Arkus Duntov, who was a Russian immigrant kind of guy with a lot of good engineering skills and knew European racing. And he got a job at Chevrolet, and somehow he prevailed on the people there and said, hey, look, you know, there's no way this car is going to make it unless we find some way to compete against the Europeans and start a racing program.
So where does Frank come into this, Jan?
Well, Frank comes into it because once they got the Corvette racing, and this was in 1956, in 1957 the 265 was punched out to 283 cubic inches. They developed fuel injection, and Frank can tell you, I don't know what attracted him, but I guess he's Italian, he likes things that go fast, he found a way to get one of these cars that was red, you know, he likes to go fast.
That's the fast color, yeah.
That's how he got involved.
That's excellent. And now, when is this CD, can you tell us a little bit about the CD?
It's a DVD.
A DVD, I'm sorry.
Yes, you know, it begins from there, and then the interesting thing is that 2 years after General Motors said, hey, we got to go racing, and the program made some notoriety, don't get me wrong. They had some successes, but they geared up in 1957, and they built a prototype car to race against the big boys as opposed to just the production cars, which they kept doing. And that car didn't make it. They overstyled it and under-engineered it. But they were headed to take that car to Le Mans, and they were all geared up to, you know, continue in racing when in, I think it was May or June of 1957, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler entered into a ban. They said, we ain't going to race cars anymore.
Right.
So that was the end of that program. And, of course, there was Duntov and a lot of enthusiastic people like Frank. And they said, hey, look, we got to figure out a way to race these cars. And Frank can tell you better. Again, I followed this, but I didn't know him personally at the time. But the Corvette then went on. They won B production national championships in 50, let's see, C production in 56, 57 through 64. What is that like? That's 7 plus 1, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Corvettes were dominating sports car racing, and there wasn't one bit of factory formal involvement. But Frank will tell you, they got parts, and they got, you know, better brakes and better suspension and ways to make these cars last longer. And of course, Frank is an engine builder. You know, Frank was one of the few people who had his own dyno, and probably still there in a shop. And, you know, he really knew how to get the most out of him, and he was a very good driver.
Jen, well, thank you so much for the call. We really appreciate this. We do have to go to break.
Good. Go to break and enjoy the rest of it. And if we carry on in the future, it's my pleasure, and we can do that.
Oh,
thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Okay,
we would love it. Jen, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
I'll talk to you soon.
Right.
Bye-bye. 516-572-7440, 516-572-7440. Frank Mignani from High Speed Power in High Speed and Power.
High Speed Power, yes.
In Valley Stream, Long Island. This is Motor Mouth Radio. Ray Garino, Mikey T. I'm Chris Switzer. Stick around. We got a lot more to talk about. So keep it right here to Motor Mouth Radio.
Let the Motor Mouth help you with all of your car questions at 516-572-7440.
Hello, I'm Dr. Duffy Spencer, social psychologist and host of WHPC's Just Relationships. A great life is all about having great relationships, and I'd like to offer you concrete ways to make your relationships better. Whether it be with your boss, your spouse, your children, or your friends, the quality of your relationships in life directly affects your self-esteem, your happiness, and the success you achieve. I choose only the best top experts and authors from all around the country to help you manage this essential part of your life. So, if you want to achieve healthy and happy relationships, join me each week for Just Relationships at WHPC 90.3 FM, the voice of Nassau Community College, where helping you communicate is what we're all about.
Every Monday at 8:30 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio, where we're taking those calls at 516-572-7440. Frank Dominiani from High Speed and Power in Valley Stream, a racing legend. We're talking driving here.
And Frank was also a teacher.
Yes, very true. He was also a teacher. That's right. And speaking of teachers, you know him, you love him. He's on the air even as we speak. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bronc from Reno, Nevada and all points west. How are you, my brother?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Very good. Say hello to an old friend, Frank Dominiani.
Oh, hello out there, Frankie boy.
This is Steve Brancatello.
One and only.
Oh, God.
Who was a host and who is now our West Coast correspondent for here for Motor Mouth Radio. And
he used to sit in this seat over here until I got on board. Oh, after he retired, I didn't kill him or anything. Okay. He just, you know.
Yes.
He left on his own.
Now he's in Reno in the insane asylum, and they only give him one phone call on Sundays.
Yes.
That's my claim to fame nowadays. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
You doing all right?
Bronc, we have Frank on here who was a pinnacle of the racing society back in the 50s and 60s with straight axle Corvettes.
No kidding.
And he's also a man who was the guy to see. He ran factory fuel injection setups on his 50 series Corvettes back in the day before they were on the production cars.
Before they were popular, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
So this is a man
of umpteen knowledge.
Absolutely.
Yes. Very true.
And Frank, I know we were talking about it yesterday, but
if we had to get him to talk, he'll hear more of it.
I asked him how those, because you know, today you have a TPS switch, you have an idle air controller, idle speed motor, all
mass
the
air sensor.
And I said, Frank, how did it work back then? And he said, it's all, well, tell us, the little linkages. And
it's all mechanical.
It was all mechanical.
Yeah, right. Simple mechanics.
Frank would have loved it out here with the hot August nights because they had a lot of vintage race cars.
Right.
These guys were running like front end dragsters going back to the 50s, you know, the old channeled hot rods that they made into
mm-hmm,
dragsters.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
For lack of a better term.
Right.
They had a lot of vintage Corvettes with original fuel injection systems on it. I saw two straight axles on a 61, 62 Corvette.
Oh, my God.
Set up with the old Chrysler Hemis. They were dropping Hemis
God.
And things with the axle.
Yeah.
It's just fun stuff.
Yeah,
just
right.
Great fun stuff.
Wow.
You know?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
You lose track of over the years. In fact, I'm sending you guys a copy each, a DVD of a lot of the cars that is about 200 pictures.
Oh, really? Good.
Type of car, so that'll be in the mail this week.
And they'll go on the website.
That's good, because I didn't get the last pictures you sent, so I'll get these.
What?
I said, that's good.
These are just snapshots. Some are really clear. Some were at the nighttime cruises. They had these trucks out there, and Frank could appreciate this. If he remembers back when he was cruising, they used to light up the exhaust in the 50s.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the old spark plug, dumping fuel. Well, they were doing these with tractor-trailers, shooting flames 30, 40 feet up in the air.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Yeah, I got a couple of good shots of that. You'll see that there.
Wow.
So it's a whole nostalgia thing. And then having Frank over there on top of it, he'll be able to bring in some of those stories about when the kids used to cruise.
Steve.
You remember that?
Real cruising. Tell Frank what you're driving. What Corvette you have?
66.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
He did it. Real fast. It's a 43,000-mile original car. I found it out in Patchogue. The car was the second, I'm third owner on the car. It was basically intact, full matching number car. Wasn't a hack job over the years. Everything was there except for like a lot of little trim, like the shielding, the ignition shieldings, fan shroud, you know, but little tiddly things.
Hmm.
Put the car back to 98% original.
Frank, what did you think of the Corvettes when they came out in 63, the Stingray design? I know you had a famous quote about these cars.
Well...
What was your impression of those after driving the earlier models?
Well, there was kind of an upgrade, you know, but a different style of driving is required because you had independent suspension. Straight axle job, you had to be a dirt tracker in order to make it go around the corners. You didn't steer it, you dirt tracked it.
Right.
On the Stingray, of course, you had to follow practice.
Right.
Of, independent suspension.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford the damn things, otherwise I would have had one.
What do we have all?
Straight axle means no sway bar needed.
That's true.
Wide through the turns.
Right. Bronk, Frank would actually go up against these independent axle Stingrays in 63 and 64, and he had a straight axle 62 that was actually taking them on and beating them.
Yeah.
Well, you got to realize the independent suspensions were not track cars.
No.
And they couldn't come out of the hall. They'd bust axles. Frank would tell you they'd blow wheels sideways.
Yeah,
right.
They really couldn't come off the line. They weren't set up to come off the line.
They were built for comfort. The other thing people don't realize is suspension...
To compete with the European road handling cars.
Right. The suspension also takes up handling.
After the European style of like the Jim Connors racing, the cone racing, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was designed to mountain driving, for lack of a better term, curves and in and out of curves, in and out of turns. So it was more for handling rather than for straight power acceleration, straight line acceleration.
Like Pike's Peak.
Right.
So it's like putting a powerboat against an ocean liner.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
So there were two different worlds, and I made
Frank was winning with the ocean liner.
The first Corvette I built was a 63, and I put a 454 in there.
And then he ran it into a bicycle rack.
Yeah, well, that was the first crash. It was just too much power coming out of the car.
He was a school teacher in Long Beach, and he put a big motor in a car, and as he came out of the thing, he said, "Let me show you how this runs," and he hit the bike rack. How many bikes did you pay for?
Shift when the wheels are off the ground.
Yes, not a bad idea.
Not a good idea. For those of you out there, if your front tire is off the ground, don't power shift. Words of advice.
Rock, the maracas are shaking.
Tell her to go get a boot job or something. Okay, you got too much hanging over the table. Tell her to take those triple dipple D's and cut them down to a double D.
So, anyway, guys. Thank you so much for the call. We totally appreciate it.
I'll talk to you guys. Give me a call during the week and give you some updates.
You got it.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. 516-572-7440 is the phone number.
Frank, I wanted to talk about that fuel injection again. What it took to set that thing up, how you actually had a... You know, it's all vacuum, correct?
Yeah, it was all vacuum control, and the mechanical linkage dictated how much fuel would go to the nozzles.
Right.
And since there was no electronics involved, it was something you could play with, something you could see, you could feel.
Right.
of course, learning it took time, and of course you had to have a feel for it. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't play with it all the time, you wouldn't know what the hell you were doing.
Sure.
With it. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, one after another, I learned each day, I learned something about it.
And you still play with these things, correct?
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure.
Really?
I just recently finished one for one of my customers out here now. The Puma, I did his whole engine, he gave me the fuel injection. Yeah. I set it up on a machine. And the beautiful part is that once you do it, there's no change to be made.
Frank still has his dyno set up.
That's my next question. Once you set it up, it's pretty much because it's
pretty
a mechanical
much so.
Setup.
No, in most cases, these guys get 100,000 miles out of these damn things.
That's why people get excited. They sit there and talk about fuel injection, and the bottom line is everything pulse width and all this today. Years ago, it was all mechanical.
Right? Really all true. Mechanical, right.
Let's go to the phones, back to the fun. Skip from Bayshore, how are you? And you know this is Motor Mouth Radio. What's going on?
Chris, Mike, Ray,
hey,
and Frank.
Yes.
Just on the other side of the coin, growing up in Limerick in the 60s, I used to pass Frank's shop all the time, high speed. I had a 63 Corvette that I actually had springs done across the street at Nassau Spring. But we used to pass his shop in Drool because we were the spit, baling wire, and gum crew. You know, we couldn't afford what was going on over there.
Skip, I was in his shop yesterday. I was still drooling.
Yeah, I mean, you pass his front window out there, and you see the manifolds, and you see the stuff that was there, and you're like a kid in a candy store. You just dreamt, you know. And unfortunately, I could never afford to take advantage of his expertise and what he had to offer. And it's sad now listening to him and knowing the wealth of knowledge that he's had over the years, it would have been a fantastic opportunity.
And just for the fact that he did not have to, he also worked on a budget. So, you know, it was ingenuity that got him in the front of the pack. It wasn't the money. Everybody else had deep pockets. And,
without a doubt.
And that's what I love, the fact that these are the people that we love to attract. These are the people that we love to talk to, the ones that work with their head, not with their wallet.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
He's by far a pioneer, and I applaud everything he's done for the sport and everything he's done for Corvette in general. Mm-hmm. The fact, you know, I always drooled and wished I could have had a fuel injection unit and so forth, and, you know, you heard the horror stories, and it was the old thing, you know, don't get one, nobody can touch him, you can't deal with it.
Yeah, little did you know the guy was only 3.2 miles from your front door, who was the master.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's amazing. And it's things like this that make you look back and say, boy, if you woulda, coulda, shoulda, can't.
Yeah, sure.
Hindsight being 20/20, I wish I had it to do it all over again.
Yeah,
well, that's why we're trying to keep it going and propagate it now, at least let get the word out and let people know that
exists.
People like this were around and still are there.
Right.
Without a doubt. And not even having the advantage of taking the time to use any of his expertise, I'd like to just thank him for being a part of the sport and letting him know how much he means to everybody out there, because it's people like him that really propagate the interest and the mechanics behind this stuff.
Very true.
Very nice of you. By the way, I just want to add to your conversation. I'm pleased that people out there appreciate some of the things I've done. I'm a pretty modest guy for the most part. Maybe a little hard-nosed at times, but reasonable. And to find out that there's people out there that appreciate some of the things I've done, it makes me feel honored. Thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome, and it's something that you well deserve.
Thank you, sir.
Actually, Frank's sitting here going, God, if one more people comes in and blows smoke up my butt, I'm going to have to write checks.
Skip, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the call, Skip.
I got to say one thing right off
we'll
the bat.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right,
Skip.
Take care.
Bye-bye. 516-572-7440. Frank, how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
39.
He looks good, huh? I was going to say that those health...
The answer to the name Jack Benny.
Those vitamins are excellent.
Yeah.
No, the reason I ask is because, you know, there's always something I look for in a car person, bike person, whatever it is.
Oh, you mentioned.
You still get the biggest smile... talking about what you do.
Ask Frank.
And that is the secret. You get these people that hate their jobs, and if you sit there and you really, you know, I got into bikes and I love bikes, but sometimes the business really. Yeah.
Mike, ask Frank what kind of bike he has sitting in the shop.
Oh no! Yeah. You're gonna make me cry now, aren't you?
No, you're gonna be surprised.
What is it?
I got a Honda six-cylinder
CBX.
CBX with a turbo.
With a turbo? With a turbo?
Yes. Nothing that, slow about
that
Frank.
That bike was lethal to begin with.
Yes. Yeah. And he shows it to me. He goes, yeah, oh, look. It's, I said, well, but something. He goes, yeah, it's got a turbo. I'm like, how did I know?
Probably got the aero charger on it.
How did I know? No, it was probably like an old Ray J, right? It was an old.
No. This was the turbo.
Aerocharger?
Yeah.
This was done back in the 70s. He did the bikes in 79. Yeah.
Gentlemen, we just burned another hour.
Oh, come on. I want to stay. We can't be done.
I'm telling you. Next
time we got to have Frank talk more often.
This was the... Frank, this was a pleasure, and you are always welcome here.
It's
always.
An extreme honor.
Thank you so much.
Honor to have you on.
Thank you very much.
Not often we are among legends and people that much know that have forgotten all that we know, and I'm pleased.
The next time I want to hear more stories.
Yes, it's true.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Frank Dominiani, High Speed and Power, Valley Stream, Ray Guarino, Mikey T, Chris Switzer, this was a joy.
Yeah. And Rob, stop for gas this time.
Yeah.
This is Motor Mouth Radio. Next week, same time, same place. Bye-bye.